Pizza!
Feeling like every night is pizza night?
Pizza? Again?
Spice things up with Cholula for a flavor that'll make you forget you already had pizza twice this week. Cholula Hot Sauce. The best thing ever to happen to pizza. Choose Cholula.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And that huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and Boston, Massachusetts through our links. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee whether you're considering buying or refinancing your home. And I would remind you, if I haven't already a thousand times over the past several weeks and months, rates are at historic lows. And although there's a little bit of a disconnect in the mortgage market, it's not going to be terribly apparent to you, a consumer. But the fact of the matter is the rates are at historic lows. And it's a time, if you're considering anything relative to real estate and real estate financing, now's the time to call Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700, and ask about our many programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, zero cost, zero risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash, because you have a mortgage commitment, not a qualification like many lenders will tell you. This is actual mortgage commitment, and it's available only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700, where you'll find personalized, customized service that will definitely knock your socks off. Don't forget about the only 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, even Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to dial to find out about local properties is 716-631-4800. We have a different number in each of the markets we serve. But when you call that number, all you have to do is enter the street number of the house you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and all that fast, just that fast, anytime in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. And sometimes you'll drive by a sign, and it'll be difficult to read, and you'll be doing 30 or 40 miles an hour, and you just can't stop and read it. Just get the number of the house. That's all you need, and then dial 631-4800 when you come to a stop, and we'll give you all the information you need. Come right over to you. Texted a dedicated link to a dedicated website on that particular property. We have a very active real estate market right now, whether you believe that or not. The fact of the matter is there are not enough homes on the market for the demand that exists for homes. So if you're considering selling a home, it's probably never been a better time to realize a higher price, more equity than ever before. And that may sound astounding. And if you doubt me, please call in this station today. And I'm going to give you three phone numbers today. 633-3700, that's Hunt Mortgage. And 631-4800, that's on hotline. But this one is the one for today and now. That's the number right here in the studio, 803-0930. If you're long distance, it's 1-800-616-9236. And if you're mobile, it's *930. And if you have any questions about anything I've said so far, please call. Or any other aspect of real estate, but we've got a little different topic for you today in a very special format, live remote, respecting social distance as we're doing all the time through this set of circumstances we're all living through. But before I get to my guest, I want to remind our listeners that Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And I hope I speak for a lot of you when I can't wait. When I say that I can't wait to actually go to a game again, it's going to be a great time for all of us here in Western New York. We're looking forward to hopefully a normal football season this fall. We'll see. But anyway, as I said, we have a very special show for you today. Live remote is Michael Wiener. Michael is the CEO of the United Way of Buffalo and Erie County. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You sound great.
Thank you, and you do too. I'm glad. I hope that's an indication that you're surviving all this strange time we're in pretty well.
It's always good to hear when you talk with somebody who says that they and their family are, and the people around them are safe and well. That's the most important thing.
Which goes to the heart of the matter today. You know, our mission here on the show is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate right here in Western New York. And the fact of the matter is, a large part of that is the services they receive through organizations like the United Way. And start by, if you would, Michael, just tell us the extent to which, under normal circumstances, the United Way and its related agencies, how many people do we actually serve in our community?
We probably serve in Buffalo and Erie County, probably about 85,000 people are touched through the programs and services that we're funding on an annual basis. And that includes areas of education, financial stability, and health and wellness.
Well, I would say all three of those areas are challenged today by the circumstances. Not that they're not always challenged, but it's particularly challenging today. Let's start with the first one, education. How are the organizations associated with the United Way, how are they dealing with just the issue of children not being in school?
Well, it's a great question, and obviously it doesn't only affect the organizations that we serve or fund, but just look at your own workforce. Look at our own workforce. You know, we got staff that are parents with young kids at home, so they're experiencing the same sort of dynamic, and that is that how do you engage children who are not able to go to school? The reality is that a lot of what we now see is done through virtual connecting, instruction, engagement, support is all being done online, either through instruction from educators, where they're working off of a curriculum, or it's parents and family members who are engaging their children through instructional work as well. That has become the new normal. It should be no surprise.
Yet we know for a fact that many of the families that are served by the United Way and other organizations may not have access to the kind of technology needed to have that kind of direct access to a teacher even. How do families deal with that?
That's a question. Internet access is so another issue. It's not always technology. I do know that wherever we can, we've been approached by organizations asking for ways to access hardware, and you know, where we have knowledge of either a company or a donor that has that equipment, we're making that connection. But you also have this issue of internet access, and as a result, one of the things that the community has done a nice job of promoting is central locations where internet access would be available. That is actually open, and there are some local branches of libraries or community centers that are purposely staying open strategically to make available internet access. In some instances, it's a matter of helping to purchase internet services for a very low-income family who's eligible for that type of support as well. So those are the things that we need to continue to be cognizant of, because that's really going to become not only our emergency response to families in crisis because of COVID-19. But I think what you're going to find, Peter, and I know the listeners already are thinking this way, the future is going to probably more heavily emphasize remote communication strategies for delivering products and services and engagement. I think it's also going to become part of our future culture.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting I think it's not just an observation, it's an experience. And the fact of the matter is that I think the whole society is adjusting, and it's going to affect all aspects of many aspects of our lives, I should say, such as how much do we really need to go from place to place, use our car? How much do we really need to go from building to building, like we're used to doing? And how much can be done just by virtue of a virtual arrangement.
Yeah.
But let's go back in a little bit here, if we can, Michael. What is the essential mission of the United Way? How does it impact our community? And just a few ways that that's changed or been modified because of current conditions.
I think we certainly have a good example, and I give you examples of how other organizations are responding as well. Our mission is to bring people, organizations, and resources together to create systems change and improve quality of life. This is clearly an unprecedented time for all of us, and our initial action was the safety of our staff and maintaining business continuity. Those were top priorities for us. And it meant for us, and this is true of many organizations, that we needed to move rapidly to a work-at-home culture. We needed to change our policies and practices, particularly things like personal time off, so that we could respect and support the team so that they could deliver the same level of service, albeit remotely, and do it as an essential service, because we're one of the, under New York State, we are still classified as an essential service, but we can do our work to a great extent by working at home and in the community. So that was key to our ability to continue to deliver services and supports, to continue to allocate resources to critical programs in our community. I think one thing that people don't necessarily appreciate is how large of a sector the not-for-profit sector is relative to the economy. It represents over 1.4 million jobs in New York State. It's almost approaching 20% of the workforce, and it covers about $62 billion in wages a year across the state. In Erie County alone, there are close to 7,000 not-for-profits that are providing service, everything from very small not-for-profits to extremely large multi-million dollar organizations. And they are all experiencing the same challenges. How to continue to engage in service, remain viable, and at the same time deal with increased demand. Look at the number of people that are now unemployed in our community that we're working, that now they are what are now at risk because they don't have good access to food or housing or their ability to pay bills that they once were able to do because income was coming in. So this is a very fragile time for our community, and where everybody is stepping up in a collaborative way to do what they can to make a difference, particularly right now in an emergency response mode. For example, the West New York philanthropic community came together. They invited us to the table, and we're one of four lead agencies that are now coordinating a work group that is responding, providing fundraising opportunities, volunteer engagement support, looking at in-kind needs that consumers and providers have, allocating resources where they're most critically needed. $5.5 million has been raised over just the last 2.5, 3 months that has been, actually 2 months, that has been allocated to over 109 programs for critical services. And those critical services won't be a surprise to any of the listeners. It's food and shelter and transportation, financial challenges, or just generally asking for information about what the COVID virus means in our community and how to access personal protection equipment like masks and things like that. So it is the new normal. It is where we are. The community is responding in a very fantastic way. And I think it's only because everybody's willing to come together and work in a collaborative way.
In the paper this morning at Buffalo News, it indicated that there were 11,000 more unemployed people just in the last month here in Western New York, 11,000 people. We used to talk about a great year in Western New York where we increased the net employment here by a couple, 3,000, maybe 4,000, 5,000 people. That would have been considered a very good year. Yet in 1 month, we lose 11,000 jobs. I can't imagine what that means in terms of the inquiries that come into the United Way. How do you handle this, Michael? What happens inside the organization with you functioning, working at home? How do you even route all that input?
Well, one of the things that we've done, and this was started many, many years ago, and it's actually part of a national program Your listeners may have heard of 211. It's a national and local and regional information and referral call center that's available 24/7. Here in Erie County, it's one of seven counties served by Olmsted Center for Sight that provides this 24-hour service, and people are calling regularly to get support, get information, get direction around what they may be eligible for, from unemployment insurance to how do I find a temporary job to I need access to food, where's the closest food pantry? And I want to just give you some idea of the call volume. 211 Western New York, serving seven counties. The first week of March, they had a little over 1,000 calls. The following week, the calls jumped up to 2,500. And the week after that, they were another 2,500 calls. The call volume has been enormous. And this is also available. It's a database of information referral resources as well. You could just go online to 211wny.org. And you will find over 40,000 different types of services that are available in our community and across the region. So this is just one of the tools that we use. We fund probably 80% of that cost of that program is funded through the United Way and through a state grant. And we think this is one of the resources that is very responsive to in a time of need like this.
You are also, I'm sure you're engaged with our political infrastructure to try to help plan an exit from the current lockdown situation that exists in our economy. Are you engaged in that discussion? I mean, or are they just leaving the crisis services to organizations like yours and dealing with the kind of the overall economic climate separately?
Well, we definitely are, from a public policy and advocacy standpoint, we definitely want to be visible. We want to engage our statewide and federal leaders. We're part of the United Way worldwide advocacy effort, as well as the New York State United Way Association. So we want to speak with one voice, and we want to advocate for things that will be responsive to the not-for-profit sector and to the citizens that have the greatest needs. So things like, for example, the CARES Act is just one example of something that we stepped behind and wanted to support. We also want to support food access and addressing issues around food insecurity. And the Safety Net Assistance Program, we've been very vocal about. We also are concerned that the charitable deduction change that was made in the CARES Act is not sufficiently incentivizing people who can make gifts to not-for-profit agencies to do so. They have like a $300 cap on non-itemizers who want to make contributions. And we think that that should be higher. And so we're advocating in that regard as well. We also, one of the things that we really haven't talked about is the sustainability of the not-for-profit sector, which is heavily supported with government aid. And as a result, what happens when local government, state government, and federal government cuts into these critical services? How are we going to respond at that point? This is another area of advocacy that we need to pay particular attention to.
Well, we hear every day about the deficits at virtually every governmental level. So it seems to me that the low-hanging fruit is to go after the organizations, the cultural organizations. We had Joanne Folletta and Dan Hart on from the Buffalo Philharmonic last week, and it seems to me it's always those organizations, cultural, athletic, and then charitable, that are first to cut, or to be cut, I should say. And, to me this is backward, but that seems to be the case. So how do you speak for yourselves, and how do you advocate for yourselves, all kinds of organizations like yours? And I understand that there are 1,300 local United Ways in this country still. Is that about the right number?
Yeah, it's about 1,100 now, Peter. Yep.
And that there's here, and I guess that goes worldwide, actually, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's actually it's the largest public charity in the world. It has over 35 countries that also have local United Ways. And, you know, one of the things that we have noticed that we're very concerned about, I've studied a couple of surveys, that, and we conducted our own survey on behalf of the region as part of the West New York Philanthropic Response. And what do you think the number one challenge that over 300 not-for-profits have articulated in these surveys, as well as the national surveys? It's all about finances and sustainability. Mm-hmm. Just as an example, a lot of charitable organizations, some of which you mentioned, they do fundraisers throughout the year. Well, what if they're doing a fundraiser during the height of COVID-19, and now they have to postpone, cancel that fundraiser? That's going to directly impact their bottom line. What about small not-for-profits that don't have sufficient cash reserves, and now they can't pay bills and they're at risk of bankruptcy? These are the kinds of challenges that organizations are going to face, particularly while they're also addressing the needs to serve more people. You talked about the unemployment rate. The higher the rate of unemployed, the more people that are going to come to food pantries for access to resources. And if we don't have those resources available, it's just another point of vulnerability on behalf of at-risk consumers. So there's a lot of concern here. Now, granted, does this result in maybe more collaboration, more shared services amongst the not-for-profit sector? That's always been something in debate. There are some best practice models that are evolving locally in that regard, and my hope is that we'll see more of that. But we don't want to see critical services put at risk and then people underserved as a result.
We do have to go to break, Michael, but I want you to think about just the whole impact of business shutdown on the whole continuum that you just described. And we'll come back and with more with Michael Weiner from the United Way after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate, and through our links out to Phoenix, Arizona, and also Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, effectively allowing you to buy the before and the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment when you get someone on the phone there, and also if you've already been qualified for a loan or you've got some a piece of paper or something in your email that says that you're qualified for X number of dollars and here's going to be your payment, and give it a second look. That's what we call our second look service. And all you have to do is call 633-3700. We'll review that for you and make sure that you're getting the lowest rate and closing costs that's at all possible in today's market. And we have a very, very interesting home financing market, lowest rates perhaps ever. And it's an opportunity for you to capitalize on what is still a very strong real estate market, believe it or not. And you know, it's interesting, and our topic today is really what's happening to a lot of people in our community as a result of the COVID-19 suppression of our economy, effectively. And to help me with that discussion is the CEO of the United Way for Buffalo and Erie County. That's Michael Weiner. Welcome back, Mike. And I just want to kind of pick up where we left off. Many businesses have effectively been crushed through this whole process or have been at least closed for the time being. And many are evaluating ever coming back into business, and particularly in the hospitality industry where a lot of people, and this may be true for a great portion of our of our culture, our society, and that is the people that live paycheck to paycheck. They work hard every day. They establish a lifestyle, but basically they need a paycheck every week to maintain that lifestyle. And this is not uncommon anywhere in this country, but certainly in a community like Buffalo, it's very common. And a lot of those jobs, those paychecks, come from small businesses all over our community, which effectively have been shut down. And I watched a report on the news this morning kind of detailing the four phases of re-entry into some degree of normalcy. And one group that's not even on the list are a lot of these very, very small businesses, the salons, the gyms, places like that. They're not even on the list. So when people contact you, there must be a certain amount of desperation in their voice and in their attitude, which breeds a whole new level of service need. How are you assessing the demand for various services as the call volume has increased into 211, and how do you deal with that?
Well, one of the things that we are very concerned about is exactly the cohort of people that you're talking about. We refer to them as ALICE. It's an acronym for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. They're more commonly referred to as working poor families. They live paycheck to paycheck, as you're suggesting. They don't have assets or savings that they could rely on in the event of an emergency. And we always talk about this population being one paycheck away from the possibility of a crisis. And so because of the higher rate of unemployed, a direct result of businesses not being able to sustain in light of social distancing issues and the like, there are more people who are working poor families than ever before that are out of work. Now, the hope, as you suggest, is that they'll eventually get back to work and those paychecks start coming back in and create a little bit more stability. But remember, these are families that are struggling just from a self-sufficiency standpoint to begin with, to pay their bills, health, child care, housing issues, food, and the like. And so this is of great concern to us. We're getting a lot of the 211 gets a lot of calls, as do providers, about this group of individuals that are they don't have as good access to federal public assistance type programs. They may not be eligible for the safety net assistance program, commonly referred to as food stamps, as one example. They may not get rental stipends through federal government for public housing, things like that. And as a result, they're at great risk. And how do you respond? Well, we've all seen a spike in the rate of stress and behavioral health challenges that people are facing. And one of the high volume calls that is coming in as a pattern to the 211 call center operators are people just calling because they want to talk to somebody. They want to share their concerns. They certainly want to get information and get support, but they're literally calling because they don't know who else to reach out to, and they need somebody at the other end of that line that's going to listen to them and then hopefully direct them appropriately. Another higher incidence that we're starting to see is people getting support who have pre-existing behavioral health challenges, mental health concerns, who now, because of increasing stress, loss of work, difficulty navigating the community and the system of care, they're now in need of elevated services. Well, the response has been the behavioral health community has been great in making available telemedicine so that they can counsel and support individuals virtually. That's one of the examples we talked earlier. That's probably going to become the new normal around medical care, behavioral health care. 20, 30 years ago, it was very rare, usually used primarily in rural communities. Well, I think what we're now seeing is we could be effective in providing telehealth and behavioral health to support people that are being challenged through that vehicle as well. So I think you're going to see more of that over time.
I want to have your thoughts on what was just mentioned on the news at 9:30. It was mentioned that there are 4,433 cases here in Erie County, that there have been 357 deaths. 55% of those have been in nursing homes. Just if you take those statistics on the face of it, do you see justification for the total shutdown of the economy in Erie County virtually in these kinds of numbers when we know that probably two or three times that many people, 10 times that many people have died of cancer or heart disease or a host of other diseases in the meantime, many of whom wouldn't go to the hospital or couldn't get the care they needed because they were scared, maybe, or because the supposedly elective services were shut down. Does any of this seem proportional to you, Michael, in your position and the view you have of our local society?
It's a challenging question, Peter, but I'll say a couple of things. And by the way, my mother-in-law is in a nursing home where there has not been, it's at a area, but it's not been one diagnosed case of the virus. And so thank goodness for that. I think there's more research is needed to see why there's such a high percentage in nursing homes of the virus. Is it that they've allowed access? Is it staff related? I think there's, and I know the health department, New York State, is undertaking more research in that regard, because obviously it's an anomaly. It's too high of an incidence, puts families and older adults at risk, but at the same time, it may be saying something about the healthcare strategies being utilized. That being said, clearly, the sooner we get the business community back, back at work, providing the needed services, as well as benefiting those organizations that are, hold ownership of those companies, the better off the economy is going to be and the better off the community is going to be overall. But it has to still be done in a strategic way, mindful of the fact that there are too many people that are still being exposed to the virus, where there is still not the level of preventative services that people are feeling confident with that would reduce exposure and respect the safety of the larger community. So, I'm glad I don't work in government right now, because that's a challenging issue to take the data and the research that's being done and make an informed decision about when is the right time for business to reopen, for not-for-profit sectors to start reintroducing staff coming back into their work environments. I think it's going to have to be done gradually, and it's going to have to be done planfully. Otherwise, what happens, Peter, is, you're listening to the same reports that I'm listening to. We may have a reduction because as the weather gets better and there's more sunlight and heat, that may retard the growth of the virus. But what happens in the fall? Are we going to have, revert back to the same kind of crisis we had this past month and the month before?
Michael, if I can just interrupt you for a second, and I appreciate every single thing you said there, and but I really wanted your thoughts on the proportional nature of what's been really kind of a shutdown of our economy and the devastation that's been created. I just wonder, from your perspective, is when you go from 1,000 inquiries at 211 to 2,500 in a week, or whatever the time frame was, and it stayed up high, I'm assuming, ever since. That's 2.5 times. 2,500 people are voicing real need. And then you've got a total of 357 deaths as a result of this. Is there anything, and those 2,500 people, I would suggest there's many aspects of their life that's in danger right now, perhaps more so than any virus. And we've got to go to a break, but I just want you to think about that.
Sure.
Because you and your position have a different view of our society than I do, certainly. And the fact of life is that I'm seeing it from both ends, but I don't see it anywhere near the way you see it. And so to the extent to which I would really like your thoughts on that, because I've got real concerns about the backside of this whole thing, and if those families that you're serving, those individuals you're serving, will really have what the outlook is for them. We'll be right back with more From Our House to Yours.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. Everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call them today, 633-3700. Before the break, Michael, I was trying to get you to put into some kind of perspective from your point of view what's going on in totality in our world today. And I'm not just talking about Western Europe, I'm talking about the whole country. But certainly, if you take, put on a scale, we in New York State are way at one end of that scale in terms of the real clampdown compared to other parts of the country and other parts of the world, for example, like Sweden. And I just wonder, from your standpoint, is there any proportionality to what's going on here, or is this just me? Are we really weighing this risk as opposed to the enormous risks that have been the harm that's been created in our culture throughout the entire country? Is there any proportionality there, in your opinion?
Well, I think the conundrum is that the etiology and how to treat the virus is just unknown. That being said,
let's assume that all that's true and we don't know. But has the response been proportional to the actual effect of the suppression of our economy, from your perspective?
Well, yeah, I think it's all data driven, Peter.
If it's data driven, could we have possibly made these decisions? Because the data would tell you that there is no proportionality. But go ahead, please. I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, I want to give you some examples. Like you mentioned the call rate for 211. Well, what we didn't talk about is last week that call rate went down to 1,400. And so that's just an indication that more people are getting service, more people in the not-for-profit sector are feeling more confident. More people that are displaced because of the virus are getting access to the services they need. I see that as encouraging. I want to leave this call on an upbeat because I do think there's more discussion than ever before when you talk about proportionality, whether you feel that we could have accelerated responses to building back up business shutdowns and so on. I see more discussion than ever around not only the business sector, but the not-for-profit business sector planning a return to work mode. And I think that's very promising. Now, there'll still need to be safety features, social distancing, protections, and things like that. But I will tell you, our organization, we're participating in a lot of webinars, doing a lot of research on a return to work culture. We want people to be able, we don't want to put people at risk. We want them to get back to work. Granted, some work can be done remotely, and that may still be retained, maybe for staff that have children at home and they don't have alternatives for childcare. Those kinds of things, I think, are very promising. So I do think that this community is starting on a pathway that will hopefully end up with the business continuity we talked about earlier and eliminating the level of shutdowns that you see. But it still needs to be done, tracking the data and making sure that it's still respectful from a safety standpoint.
Well, let's look at the positive side, like you're saying here. Business ramps back up, becomes hopefully something like what it was before. And we had a great deal of momentum here in Western New York that was culpable. You could feel it. That produced lots of taxes, including sales tax, property taxes, all kinds of things. Lots of revenue for governments, which kept them going and kept a lot of the services that you're talking about. And you mentioned earlier about how much really a lot of our social service organizations, healthcare, et cetera, how much they depend on government. So, okay, we're back in business. Taxes are ramping back up. And also what will ramp back up naturally then will be donations to organizations like the United Way. The flip side of that is that we stay where we are for an extended period of time. Businesses don't come back the way we expect them to or would like them to. And tax revenue continues to be way, way, way below where it was. And obviously people then are going to be staying a little closer to home, and they're going to say, well, maybe I'm not going to give as much this year as I gave before. Now, you said that there was a great response, and I agree with you. When people are in need in this community, people respond. And I can't say enough about the quality of our and the extent of our response in this community and how generous people are given the resources in this community. I think it's truly remarkable, and hopefully that will only continue. But the fact of the matter is, without businesses operating, without jobs, without people being going to work someplace, even if they're working from home, without that happening, there's going to be fewer taxes, which means there's going to be less revenue that's going to come into your organization, other organizations, because from the government, and there will be fewer donations because people have less money. So I guess as I look at that, the extent of the way that this has been dealt with, and the real cost to society for, let's just take Erie County and Niagara County, a total of 357 plus 42, that's, you know, something around 400 people. And no one wants to see any life lost. But the fact of the matter is, when 55% of those deaths are in nursing facilities, we get... It just doesn't make any sense to me, Michael, that we've gone through all we've gone through for now. Who knows how long it's going to be before we can even ramp back up to something resembling what we were before. And in the meantime, organizations like yours have to perform enormous amounts of service. Increase, you said, down to 1,400. That's still 40% higher than you said the normal level was, something like 1,000. That's a lot of demand. So I'm venting a little bit here, Michael, but I know how much you care about this community, and I do too. And as I see what's going on and I listen to people every day, it just doesn't add up right. And I just need your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that's why there's much more discussion than ever before about a return to work mindset. And I think the more rapidly that we can safely get people back to work, regardless of the sector they're in, the better off the entire community will be. And I think you're right. I think from a financial, that's why the surveys that I had studied are all focusing in on how not-for-profits are very, very, and as well as government, deeply concerned about future viability from a financial standpoint, because everybody's going to see cuts. And I'll just give you examples. Most recently, our campaign, which usually goes to the end of March on an annual basis, we had to cut our campaign short early March. And as a result, it wasn't the only contributing factor, but our campaign was down $600,000 from the prior year. And we believe that was associated with the emergence of the COVID-19 virus. Agencies that, like the Philharmonic and the Family Justice Center, has a breakfast every June. These are the kinds of programs that they're going to have to figure out virtual ways of fundraising, because they're not going to be able to gather, 800 or 500 people to a central location for the purposes of celebrating the organization's success and now making a contribution. This is going to continue. And businesses, as you suggested, they're going to see lower revenues, which means, and we get a lot of corporate support. We have tremendous support from organizations like Hunt Realty and Wegmans and Tops, and the list goes on. And we are concerned that we're going to see lower rates of support from the corporate world as a result. We hope that's not the case, but quite frankly, it's all going to come down to what their finances look like at the end of the day and how much they'll be able to make in the way of charitable gifts to charities of their choice. So this is a tension point for the whole community. And when you hear government, both state and federal, and now local, talking about making cuts as well, the range of non-mandated services that will be available to support our community will likely go down as a result. And that's where the corporate world, the philanthropic community, the sector that can support and respond to building back a better, in a recovery mode, a better response, is really going to be the future of what we need to all spend time on.
And here's some real good news. And I insist that we end the show on a very positive note. One of the very interesting things we're seeing really all through upstate right now in all of our offices is a growing interest from people that live in the major metropolitan areas wanting to move to communities that are more livable. And certainly Buffalo is among the most livable cities in the world from any kind of perspective. And the quality of life here is obviously staggeringly good. Hopefully it will remain that way as we go through this issue. So in the upcoming weeks, we're going to be looking at we're going to be talking with the president of the Builders Association to look at how we're building new homes to meet this new need. We're going to be talking with Tom Kucharski at Invest Buffalo Niagara to find out how we're continuing to attract businesses to our community based on the desirability of communities like Buffalo and Erie County and all of upstate based on just our as an alternative to living in a high rise and a teeny little apartment in New York someplace. We're also going to be talking with Renee Jones from M&T Bank to find out how financial institutions are dealing with all this. And we're also going to be talking about the educational system and how it's adapting or how it will adapt as we approach a new school year next fall with SAYS Buffalo and David Russ. But before we end the show here, and there's a caller on the line here that we'll take one quick call. John, how can we help you quickly?
Oh, hey, guys. I just wanted to weigh in. I agree with Peter. This basically is an overreaction and very not well thought out. It's doing a lot of damage to the economy, and we need more talk like that. We need responsible business leadership. I do feel that there's too many not-for-profits in this community, and the executive director salaries are absolutely outrageous. Poor people not getting rich.
That's an interesting comment there. Michael, we've got about 2 minutes left, and I'd like you to kind of tie this up, and I appreciate John's comments in terms of his sense of the proportional response that we've had here. But in the last couple of minutes here, just kind of tie this together for us, if you would, please, in terms of the immediate future, the immediate needs of organizations like the United Way, how you're fulfilling needs in the community, and also what you see on the back end of all this.
Well, I think John's point is spot on. I do believe that the financial crisis that's going to be created in response to COVID-19 is going to really turn the not-for-profit sector on its head. And I'm hoping that the outcome of that is that you see much more collaboration and maybe even the consolidation of services. As an example, we in West New York, there are in eight counties, there are seven local United Ways, maybe eight local United Ways. There's no reason why that can't be a regional United Way system, as one example. And they all can still operate independently, but maybe the back office functions, IT, technology, marketing, finance are all managed internally by a single organization. That's the direction that we would love to take. And we are having conversations, but maybe, just maybe, this crisis accelerates those conversations. So I think John's really spot on there. This is a giving community, and I have high regard for everything that the business community and the not-for-profit sector has accomplished, particularly during this crisis, but it's not over yet. And as a result, we continue to be focused on an emergency response for the next month or so, and then we'll move to recovery mode. And the way that people are helping now is by making financial contributions, and we really do appreciate that. As I said, the philanthropic community has generated, we're close to about $7 million in assets that have been collected through the philanthropic community, through the Western New York WNYresponse.org portal that we're managing. We think that that's going to continue for a while longer, and that's going to help us as well. But we're going to need to step back and start talking about recovery and how do we respond in the fact that we now have less resources equals challenges, if not greater challenges, moving forward.
Michael Wiener, CEO of the United Way of Buffalo and Erie County, thank you very much for being with us today. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your thoughts. I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.